You're all set now.
Okay, this is the final meeting of Framework 4 to the Monkfish Plan. Phil's going to give a presentation, and then we're going to come back and start going through the motions that the committee worked on at the last Monkfish meeting. Phil.
Thank you. Good morning. In your binder, item number 7 under Monkfish is a paper copy of the presentation I'm going to give. Much of the introductory parts of this will seem very familiar to most of you because it's in essence the background material that was provided at the first meeting of the framework back in March. These are the things we're going to cover in this, a little background, the status of the stocks, some of the issues with regards to the science of managing monkfish, which is critical to some of the decisions we have to make. Then there's a little bit of purpose and need, quick summary of the timeline, and then the recommendations from the committee as well as the PDT and the advisory panel for specific alternatives. I won't go into great detail here, but we've had this FMP now since 1999, a 10-year rebuilding plan, 3 years left. There's limited entry, 2 management areas, recognition of the close tie between the scallop fishery and the monkfish fishery, and as well as the multi-species and the monkfish fishery. Up until now, the southern area has been managed by trip limits and days at sea for monkfish, whereas the northern area has been primarily controlled by the management of multi-species effort. Framework 2 was adopted do a number of things, one of which was to eliminate the year 4 default measures in the original FMP, which would have closed the directed fishery. Framework 2 also adopted a program for setting trip limits, TACs, and days at sea, trip limits and days at sea in the south, and TACs for both areas that was designed to achieve the rebuilding goals by 2009. And it also increased the incidental limit in the northern area because at the time, this northern area stock was almost rebuilt. Since multi-species vessels that have a monkfish limited access permit fishing in the northern area already had no trip limit, there was nothing to relax in recognition of that condition of the stock, so they increased the incidental limit to help to achieve some level of optimum yield. In the southern area, we adopted a method for setting the trip limits and days at sea that looked at the status of the stock based on the survey index relative to an annual target and the landings in the previous year and made an adjustment to that. As with the original FMP, Framework 2 recognized that the incidental catch of monkfish in the non-directed fisheries actually takes precedence over the directed fishery, so that our estimate of incidental catch is subtracted from the TAC, and then the remainder is used to calculate what the appropriate management measures are. This is a summary of the northern area stock status. We only use the fall survey index. We use a 3-year average, and with Framework 2, we adopted this annual incremental target based on a straight line of where we were in 1999, where we need to be in 2009, which is our B target. And as you can see, the northern area increased very rapidly. The first 3 or 4 years of the plan was nearly rebuilt and then began to decline. And as of the survey last fall, actually fell below the minimum biomass threshold and has, in that sense, returned to an overfished status. At both stocks, we have an unknown status with respect to whether overfishing is occurring. There's no ability to estimate fishing mortality rates currently. The southern stock also realized an increase in the first 4 or 5 years of the plan. and both stocks actually doubled or more than doubled in those first years of the plan. Then it tapered off and has since declined, again also being overfished again in 2005. Briefly, some of the science issues, very incomplete data with respect to historical landings, basic biology, the range of the stock, and even though we do have a long time series with the fall survey, there is a very low sample rate, and the survey number jumps around quite a bit. That's why we use a three-year running average. As I noted, there's no reliable estimate of fishing mortality rates. We have also tried to address some of these issues with a cooperative survey in 2001 and 2004. Efforts are underway now to have one again in 2007, and I'm not certain as to the status of that right now, but hopefully that will help to provide us with an alternative to the survey, especially considering the fact that the albatross is retiring, and we're not certain that the calibration of the new survey to the old survey will enable us to use the long time series of the albatross, and therefore we will be starting from scratch. The second bullet here relates to the fact that at the time, and even up to now, the albatross is scheduled to have its last survey in 2007, which is before the end of the rebuilding plan. There was some note yesterday that the Admiral has indicated he would intends to have that survey go to 2008, but at this time, we can't count on that. We will really be needing to redefine reference points with a new method prior to 2009 so we can determine whether or not we've rebuilt the stocks. I think there's an assessment scheduled for a year from now. Hopefully they'll be able to help us out in that regard. Therefore, Framework 4 is necessary. For one, we're behind in the rebuilding schedule according to the way we're measuring it now. And the stocks both have to double. The survey indices both have to double in 3 years. That's not unrealistic. In fact, if you recall, if the first 3 years of the plan, both indices did double. So it's not an unachievable objective. The Southern Fishery Management Area, under the method that we're managing now, is subjected to annual swings in the TAC, trip limits, and days at sea based on the method that we're using. That's causing disruption to the businesses. And the industry has requested that we come up with something that stabilizes it. Under the current method, the TAC can actually increase even if the stock is behind schedule, and the regional administrator sent a letter of concern in that regard when this occurred in 2005 in the southern area. The retirement of the albatross necessitates that we at least establish a program that doesn't rely on this albatross through the rebuilding period. And then the final issue that we're trying to address here is that in the northern area, there's no direct control by the monkfish plan on monkfish effort. It relies on the days at sea and other management measures adopted in the multi-species plan because there's no monkfish trip limit, as I mentioned before. The timeline is such that we hope to have this submitted to NIMS January of 2007. This is the final meeting of the New England Council. Being a joint plan, the Mid-Atlantic Council will meet in December and approve final measures, publish a proposed rule in March, and implement by May 1st the start of the fishing year in 2007. The committee has met four times, March, June, September, and the 1st of November. The advisory panel met the day before March meeting and also the day before the November meeting. in the April and May council meetings of New England and Mid-Atlantic Council, both councils approved the goals and objectives and a range of alternatives to be considered by the committee in developing the final recommendations here for Framework 4. The objectives are, and I'm not going to read them, but you can read them. You have them in front of you. Rebuild the stocks, mitigate to the extent possible the socioeconomic effects, and provide some contingency for the survey vessel retirement. This is a list of the measures that we could do in a framework action. Again, I'm not going to read them. Probably more important to consider are the things that we can't do in a framework, that being hard quotas, individual fishing quotas, and changing the rebuilding program timetable or the reference points. The range of alternatives that was considered include a TAC fixed for 3 years, monkfish days at sea for northern fishery management area vessels, reducing the incidental limit in the north, applying a trip limit and days at sea in both the north and the southern area, and also the possibility of no directed fishing. A backstop measure in case the TAC is exceeded, perhaps an adjustment to the days at sea carryover, and as usual, there is the no action alternative that's available for consideration in each one of these general categories. Now I'm going to get into the specific recommendations for the management measures out of that range of alternatives. Both the committee and the advisory panel, as well as the plan development team, are recommending that the TACs for the northern area be 5,000 tons and for the southern area, 5,100 metric tons, be fixed for 3 years, notwithstanding the adoption of the backstop alternative. The TAC would not change. The backstop I'll get into in a minute does not change the TACs. This is based on the plan development team's very hard work and synthesizing a wide range of independent methods to come up with specific recommendations, and it's really the best we could do with the information we had available to us. The Oversight Committee, the Advisory Panel, and the Plan Development Team are recommending that monkfish days at sea be a requirement in the northern fishery management area. One of the elements of that is that a vessel fishing in the northern area equipped with a VMS and fishing on an A-day, multi-species A-day, may declare a monkfish day at sea prior to returning to port. The reason for that is that, it will help to minimize discards if a vessel exceeds the incidental limit while fishing for multi-species. It can retain those fish and declare the trip a monkfish day at sea trip. Also, has a safety aspect in that if a vessel was required to call in a monkfish day at sea before leaving port and then goes out and does not catch its trip limit, may decide to stay out and maximize its allowable monkfish catch before returning to port so that it wouldn't lose the value of that monkfish day at sea. The incidental limit in the northern area, the Oversight Committee and the Plan Development Team made a recommendation on this. The advisory panel did not. The recommendation is to reduce the incidental limit back to its original level, which is the lesser amount of 25% of the total weight of fish on board, or 300 pounds, based on the tail weight. That 25%, in other words, makes it an incidental limit. If it's not just 300 pounds a day, you have to have other fish on board to be able to attain that level. The southern area trip limit and days at sea recommendation from the committee, I'll explain. The AP recommended it also conditional upon an optional enrollment program. What we had, two different trip limit alternatives. One being the current trip limit of 550 and 450 pounds, depending on your permit category. And the other was a proposal from the industry to increase their days and have a lower trip limit of 475 or 375 days at sea. And what the committee ultimately did, based on the advisory panel's recommendation, was to blend the two and give vessels the option to elect on an annual basis into one or the other category. With a higher trip limit, obviously they get fewer days at sea, 23 days at sea. With the lower trip limits, they would get 31 days at sea. For the northern area, there were quite a range of options. We actually used the days at sea numbers that came out of the southern area calculation as a basis for some of the alternatives, as well as 40 days at sea, which is the baseline in the FMP, and calculated the associated trip limits that would be available with each of those days at sea alternatives. The difficulty with doing this in the northern area is that the vessels were not on days at sea in the past, so we had some extra steps we had to do to try and calculate what the appropriate combinations would be in order to come up with these alternatives. And furthermore, as I mentioned earlier, the TAC is first allocated to the incidental fishery. The incidental catch would be the catch that's not on a monkfish day at sea. So you have three variables, and you really need to know what the days at sea are to be able to calculate what the total incidental catch would be, because the incidental catch would be all of the multi-species days at sea minus the monkfish days times the incidental limit. It gets pretty complicated. That's as far as I'll go into the details. The bottom line is that the Oversight Committee recommended 31 days at sea in the northern area with a Category A and C trip limit of 1,250 pounds tail weight per day at sea and a Category B and D permit trip limit of 470 pounds. The A and C vessels qualified for their limited access permit with 50,000 tons during the qualification period. The Category B and D vessels had to have 7,500 tons, but obviously less than 50,000, not tons, excuse me, pounds, to qualify. The advisory panel and the plan development team did not make a recommendation from the range of alternatives that were considered for the northern area trip limit and days at sea combination. One of the alternatives under consideration that is not recommended by either of the advisory panel, the AP, or the plan development team was the moratorium on directed fishing starting in 2007, where all vessels would operate under the incidental limit. The in the event that the TAC is exceeded, the PDT recommended and the Oversight Committee is recommending that there be an adjustment in the third year of the plan if the TAC is exceeded in FY 2007. The reason for that is that, you know, we don't get the data for the year until sometime in July, and to go through the process of making the adjustment would have to occur, we have to skip a year, essentially. What the recommendation is that if the TAC is exceeded by 10% or less in either area, there would be no adjustment in 2009. If the TAC is exceeded by more than 30%, there would be no directed fishing in that area. There would be 0 days at sea allocated, and all vessels fishing in that area would operate under the applicable incidental limit. if the TAC overage falls within the range of 10 to 30%, there would be a recalculation of days at sea for 2009 based on the data in 2007. Note that we're not reducing the TAC here. It's not a quota. It's simply a recalculation using more up-to-date information. And the adjustment would be implemented through a notice action, perhaps a proposed a final rule, but no need for a framework adjustment or any further action by the council. With regards to the days at sea carryover, the Oversight Committee and the Advisory Panel are recommending no action, which is that vessels can carry over up to 10 unused days at sea. The Plan Development Team had recommended a lower number of 4 days at sea, and in the development of the framework, the Oversight Committee and the Advisory Panel considered an alternative that would have reduced the number from 10 to 6 days at sea. But in the ultimate decision recommendation, the committee chose to side with the AP and take no action on this. One thing to clarify, because there seemed to have been some confusion, the number of days at sea you can carry over is based on the unused days at sea in an area, the area with the highest allocation, which, if the committee's recommendation is adopted on the days at sea and trip limits alternative, it would be 31 days, not the 40 baseline in the FMP. So if you fish 30 days, you have 1 day to carry over, not 10. The Category H fishery is the one that was developed in Amendment 2 to provide some limited access permits to vessels that generally fish out of North Carolina, Virginia, that did not qualify under the original FMP for a host of reasons that I won't go into. But in any case, that fishery was adopted, originally considered a boundary at 38 degrees north. But also that if the turtle closures were implemented, the boundary would be set at 38.20. In fact, the turtle closures were adopted, and when Amendment 2 was implemented, the boundary was set at 38 degrees 20. Now, these vessels fish with the same days at sea and trip limits as other vessels in the southern area, but they're only allowed to use those days at sea south of this boundary. They've requested, and the committee and the advisory panel are recommending, that this boundary be moved 20 miles north to 38.40, and the primary reason for that is that the vessels have a very narrow window of opportunity to fish, given that the monkfish are only there for a limited time in the spring, and these turtle closures, which go up to 38 degrees, give them, right now, a 20-mile wide range to fish. And if, in fact, the warm water moves into the area and the turtles show up and they have to leave, they have nowhere to go. So this action would give them the ability to move away from where the turtles are and to continue fishing, at least to get as much of their allocated days at sea and trip limits in before the monkfish move. Now, there's also some question about what's going to happen after 2009. So the Oversight Committee is recommending that the Advisory Panel and the Plan Development Team did not make a recommendation on this. But in the event that the councils don't take action prior to the end of the rebuilding program that implements different measures in 2010 or you know, agrees to extend the measures in place in 2009 will continue unless the backstop provision eliminates the directed fishery in 2009, and so that goes back to the other measure that I described earlier, in which case the measures would be restored to 2008 levels in 2010 and beyond. Uh, Another item that came up during the course of this framework action, which was not one of the items that the council was considered at the beginning of the framework process, which is that vessels that are fishing in the closed area access program are not on a scallop day at sea. And there's no day at sea equivalent subtracted from their allocation. As a consequence of that, by the regulations in the monkfish FMP, the incidental limit for monkfish on a scallop vessel or a dredge vessel not on a scallop day at sea is 50 pounds per day with a maximum of 150 pounds. When a vessel is on a scallop day at sea, it's 300 pounds of tails per day at sea. The committee considered the industry's request and the AP and now proposed to restore the limit back to the 300 pounds on a per-day basis, but only counting the days that the vessel is actually fishing in the closed area access, not to include the steaming time. The committee also considered a number of other alternatives, fixed using the survey index for 2005 and having a fixed TAC, a days at sea leasing program, which the plan development team had recommended not adopting at this time because with the northern area not being under days at sea, it was very uncertain as to the degree of latent effort and how a leasing program would work, and the time that would have been required to develop a conservation-neutral leasing program risked delaying the implementation of all of the other measures in the framework. There were some other ones that were considered here. I'm not going to go through them, but if anybody has questions, I can answer them for you. That's the end of the presentation. I'll take any questions.
Ms. Phil, any questions? Dr. Pierce?
Yeah, thank you, Phil. I appreciate the presentation. And after hearing what you said and reviewing some of the documents in the binder, I must admit that I've become confused regarding what the TACs that were calculated by the plan development team, recommended to the committee, and adopted by the committee actually mean. Are the TACs landings and discards?
No, landings. Based on landings.
Okay, we need to make sure we all understand that it's not really a TAC. It's a TAL, so to speak. It's landings. My fear is that if we go with the TAC of 5,000 metric tons approximately for north and south, that we may find ourselves suddenly faced with some calculation of discard that would then count as part of the 5,000. But that's not the intent of the plan development team or the committee, correct? It's 5,000 metric tons of landings.
Correct.
Okay. And the reason why I say that is in the appendix that shows the way in which the plan development team calculated these different options for TACs. In the appendix on page X, Roman numeral X, that's in document number three, the draft framework adjustment. And we have some very important figures that show landings from 1963 through 2006, and superimposed on that very important figure four, superimposed on figure four, we see a range of TACs, but that's a range of allowable landings, not a range of catch. Just again, making
correct,
sure we all understand that we're
correct,
not, the discards don't factor into any correct of these PDT calculations, and they weren't considered by the Monkfish Committee in a reflection on those recommendations from the plan development team. It's landings.
Keep in mind, when looking at that figure, that those are reported landings, that there is a lot of landings that may have occurred that are unknown. And also keep in mind that it wasn't until midway through that time series, really, that a value on monkfish was added, and that, in fact, vessels stopped discarding. So there was likely far greater discards in the earlier period because people were not landing them, or at least reporting them as landed. And therefore, yes, you're correct, but I don't think it's a significant issue here at this point, especially since gear has become much more selective over time than not.
Okay, thank you. That clarifies things for me. And I would suggest, therefore, that we think about how we reference the targets that we will eventually set for ourselves, based in large part on the recommendations coming from the plan development team. They're really not total allowable catches. If we call them total allowable catches, I suspect that's going to come back to haunt us in a major way, even with the important clarifications that Phil has provided. Thank you, Phil.
Anyone else for Phil? Pat?
Yeah. On the issue of setting the measures for the three-year remainder of the rebuilding period, the document seems to imply that there would be, beyond the 2009 adjustment, that there would be no circumstances where the measures would be adjusted. And the council, we all have an obligation to achieve rebuilding at the end of the rebuilding period. So I think it would be disingenuous not to be clear in the document that should there be any new information that indicates that we're not going to rebuild by 2009, then there is the possibility that the target tax and the measures would be adjusted. In fact, if the assessment, for example, indicates a need for change in the target tax, then there would be a responsibility to respond to that information. So I guess it's a comment more than a question, but I want to make sure that's the understanding of the committee and the council.
Well, yes, but the conundrum is that our biological reference points and our status determination criteria become meaningless when the albatross retires. So we need to have new reference points adopted, and we also need to, because we won't be able to determine in 2009 whether or not, with our current status determination criteria, whether we have achieved rebuilding or not. Yes, there is pressure for the council, and the intent is, and I've had these conversations with the chairman, that in about a year and a half after the assessment, we will begin another action for monkfish, hopefully to put measures in place by 2010.
Well, a couple of things. First off, we don't know that the information from the albatross is going to be meaningless, or that it's when we're going to lose the albatross, that the calibration to the Bigelow won't necessarily be successful, or that we won't have enough information out of the industry surveys. My point is, it just needs to indicate that if new information indicated that we weren't rebuilding, that these numbers could change. Because we can't assume that we're not going to have some information one way or the other.
I think if that information came forward through a peer review process, the council would be compelled to act. Yeah.
Well, 3 years is a pretty short horizon to rebuild the stock, and you've got a backstop in there. So why would we take another action if you've got backstops
first of all, being a short horizon, as I pointed out, the stocks, according to the survey index, need to double in 3 years, which they did once already in this 10-year time period with less restrictive controls. And the measures that are in place under the backstop provision that would extend beyond 2010 may or may not be appropriate, particularly if we get information from an assessment or otherwise that the stocks are not rebuilding. We're going to have to redefine the reference points, and even if it's to say that the Bigelow series is calibrate it adequately and we can just use indices off the Bigelow. Or we have cooperative survey swept area biomass information that says that we're taking out 50% of the stock, which is inappropriate. Or we're taking out 10% of the stock, which may be an underachieving of our optimum yield. There's so many unknowns here. And basically, recognizing that we are going to have new information coming in from a new survey, the Bigelow, perhaps additional cooperative surveys, perhaps an accepted assessment. We know that this information is going to be coming in. We can anticipate that there's a likelihood that we'll have to do something. The only reason those extension measures are in there is because if those all those important pieces of information don't come through, what would happen in 2009? So actually, this developed through a conversation the committee had with regards to a sunset provision, which would mean that the measures would go away and we'd revert back to the old method, which is unrealistic and impracticable. But that got the committee to come up with something so that there would be something in place beyond 2009 in the event that we don't have any other information or the councils don't take action.
Well, to add to that, I think the backstop's helpful, but the backstop only responds to information about whether or not the target tax are being achieved. So whether or not the measures are adequate at achieving the target tax, it doesn't at all speak to the issue of whether or not the measures are adequate to rebuild, that is, whether the target tax is appropriate. And well, that's the bigger question.
We have said that that we don't know, we don't have the ability to project rebuilding. We don't know whether these target tax will rebuild or not. We don't have the ability to do those calculations. And therefore, I mean, even if we did not exceed the target TACs, we might not achieve rebuilding. Then again, if we exceed the target TACs, we might still achieve rebuilding because the landings at the time those stocks doubled in 3 years on both the northern area were much higher than the TACs that we're projecting here. So it's a real conundrum, but it's the best that we could do.
Anyone else? Dr. Pierce, then David.
Yeah, sorry, Phil, I forgot to ask another question. It's a clarification. In the appendix that I referenced that shows the plan development team calculations of the different TAC values and the basis for the recommendation made by the plan development team, there's Table 1. And Table 1 shows at the very top, fishing year 2006 status quo, the northern stock TAC 7,700 metric tons, the southern stock 3,700 metric tons. And the plan development team and the committee has concurred is recommending that the council go for the southern stock with 5,100 metric tons, which is an increase in the FY 2006 status quo, 3.7 up to 5.1, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. I don't understand why we are considering a recommendation that would result in a rather significant increase in the southern stock TAC. When I look at your presentation and I see that for the southern stock, this is on page 4 of the handout, your presentation, the 2005 three-year average dropped down, so we're quite a bit below. Well, quite a bit. That's the wrong way to reference it because the numbers vary so little on the y-axis, kilograms per tow. Anyways, we're below the straight line showing how we're supposed to be rebuilding to the end of the rebuilding period. So why, despite the fact that the index, the three-year moving average, has gone down, why are we considering an increase in the TAC for the southern stock?
Good question. Partly because the TAC for the southern stock may have been inappropriately low. You could say, sure, the lower, you want to be more conservative, so you have the lowest possible TAC to when your stock is not rebuilding. However, when you look at the long-range landings and exploitation rate, catch over biomass and so on, survey index, relative exploitation. A TAC of 5,000 is possibly likely to achieve adequate rebuilding based on looking at the time series. And at the same time, it addresses the other objective of the frameworks, was to mitigate to the extent possible the economic impacts of the rebuilding program. The 2006 TAC was set so low simply as a consequence of the fact that the 2004 landings were low as a denominator in the calculation. So you were reducing from a low number. There is no biological basis for that number, the 2006 TAC. It's simply a function of the method that we adopted that resulted in wide swings in the TAC from year to year. If you look at the 2005 TAC, it was higher. And the 2003 TAC, it was higher. It goes up and down, up and down. And this is to try and stabilize it at a level and avoid that swing.
Yeah, Phil, just so I can understand these various combinations here, on slide 19, does this only apply, this particular slide, as it's written, only applies to Category E vessels, right? Incidental catch vessels?
People with Category E permit? No, this applies to vessels that are not on a monkfish day at sea.
Any vessel.
And Category E vessels. Not any. Well, in another business item, the general category scallop vessel issue will come up. But for other vessels, that is what the incidental limit would be. Category E and vessels not on a monkfish day at sea.
Okay. And they can exceed this by calling in a monkfish day at sea? That's the idea of this?
Correct.
Okay. Then we go to the next slide is, that I had a question on, is 21.
Yes.
That's for the people that have the A through D permits.
On slide 20? Or oh, you
21.
Said 21. Yeah, okay. Yes.
And that, so
on a monkfish day at sea.
On a monkfish day at sea.
Right.
What are they if they're not on a monkfish day at sea?
300 pounds, if the recommendation is adopted, or 25%, whichever is less.
This is
so a vessel leaves. A vessel goes out on an A day.
Yeah.
If it's on a B day, it can only be on the incidental limit. On an A day, leaves port, it's on the incidental limit. But if it catches more than that, it will have the option to declare that trip a monkfish day at sea trip through the VMS and begin to use monkfish days at sea for that trip and not have to discard the overage from the incidental limit.
That's on a Category E. Right? I understand
no,
that.
No, categories do not have days at sea. They never get to avail themselves of these trip limits. A Category E vessel on an A day is on the incidental limit on every day.
So a Category A, B, C, or D vessel is also on the incidental limit
until it declares a monkfish day.
And then it's on this trip limit that's here, 1250
correct.
Or 470?
Correct.
Okay. I think. Wow.
Well,
I mean, this is, I mean, nobody's ever going to be able to figure out how to do this.
No, people are doing it in the South all the time, and people in the North probably could figure it out. You leave port on an A day, right? And you're fishing. The arguments are that many multi-species vessels are not, they encounter monkfish in varying quantities while they're fishing for multi-species, not necessarily that they're targeting monkfish. So if they happen to encounter a large quantity of monkfish on that A-day trip, and they have a monkfish limited access permit, they have the option to begin to call that a monkfish trip.
Right.
And use their monkfish days.
So what we really need to say here under this is that All of slide 19 applies to them as well as slide 21. In other words, a guy who gets more than 25% of a trip that's monkfish is going to have to use a monkfish day at sea, or who has more than 300 pounds. This is something the B&D vessels have never dealt with.
No, they have to discard. Right, right. They haven't dealt with it up to now because they have not had a monkfish trip.
I don't think this says that. That's
what
I'm saying.
If you look in the document itself, rather than relying on the abbreviated version in the slides, you might, I hope. And
I have read the document, and that's why I'm saying it. If it's here, I'm not understanding it. If you could,
okay.
It's around page 21, I think.
Okay. If you look on page 107 of the framework document.
All right. We'll go there.
It says incidental limits affect those vessels not on a monkfish day at sea. Okay. Under this alternative, permit category E vessels on a multi-species day at sea and limited access vessels not fishing on a multi-species day at sea, but not on a monkfish day at sea. That should be fishing on a multi-species. I have to correct that. Would be limited to 300 pounds or 25%, whichever is less.
Okay. Well, like you said, you just found something you had to change. I read it is what it said. All right, let me ask you one last question, because you've got days at sea leasing heaped on top of this whole thing in groundfish. Do people now have to lease? How are you going to deal with that? I mean, if somebody leases a groundfish day, there's no provision for monkfish days to be leased, so they're automatically back to being limited to the category E limit, the 25% or 300 pounds.
Could you repeat that? I was making my notes.
If a person leases a groundfish A day and goes fishing, there's no way to lease monkfish days at this time. So he's then limited de facto to category E.
No, if a vessel has 31 monkfish days at sea and 20 multi-species days at sea, right?
Yeah.
And then it leases 11 multi-species A days from somebody else. It can use all 31 as monkfish multi-species days.
So it can use its own monkfish days.
I'm thinking out loud here, but that would make sense to me. You have 31 monkfish days. If you only have the option to lease a multi-species A day and use it, or to fish it as a monkfish only day. Now, vessels in the north, there's only one fishery, which is an exempted fishery with a limited season and area for gillnets, where you can fish on a monkfish-only day. Or you can fish in the south on a monkfish-only day. For those days, once you've used up your multi-species days. No? Okay. Let's say you have 31 multi-species days, and you have 31 monkfish days and 20 multi-species days. If you fish 20 multi-species days without using a monkfish day, you still have 11 monkfish-only days available.
Right.
You can either lease multi-species days and go multi-species monkfish fishing, or you can fish them as monkfish-only days in one of the exempted fisheries, of which there's only one in the north and there's several in the south.
Yeah. Okay. And you've got 30, so there's 31 days that you can land monkfish in excess of 300 pounds. Or 25%.
The
25% is what's going to trip everybody up. It's not the 300 pounds. 25%, I mean, unless the dogfish fishery is open, with all the landing limits there are in the north, 250 pounds of yellowtails, 800 pounds of cod, whatever, it's almost impossible not to run up against the 25%, even with a relatively small number of monkfish, say 100 pounds, because of the landing limits there already are.
I'm certain, although I can't produce the evidence, that people have figured out ways to do that. Whiting, skates, there's a number of things that they can have on board to give them some weight so that they can retain more than the
But still has to be sold, right? We had people bringing in a few years ago, great tubs full of skates just so they could land their monkfish and then dumping them out at the dock. you know, the small skates, the little skates, whatever they are. Around here, nobody buys them for bait. I mean, you know, I want to kind of, if that's what people are going to have to do, and that's considered a landing, I don't know. I mean, I just think we're building
it's on board. It's weight of fish on board, and so I'm not sure how the enforcement is occurring, and maybe Allison can clarify that, but I don't think the regulation says that you have to sell that, or that you know.
It's the 25% applies how we deal with the percentages now. The weight of the monkfish tails is factored into the total calculation of fish on board. So the weight of the monkfish, so that 300 pounds would apply to the total weight of fish on board to figure out your 25%. So including your monkfish tail weight, you would need 1,200 pounds of fish on board, including the monkfish tail weight, to be in compliance with that 25%.
Right, and once the fish are no longer on board, there's no longer a compliance agent. A guy brings in six boxes of little skates, and he has no intention of doing anything with them except covering his monkfish trip limit. Once the monkfish are unloaded, he throws the skates over, the issue goes away. I mean, they haven't been sold, they haven't been, nothing's happened, other than we've filled the ocean up with rotten fish.
That's exactly one of the reasons why we've consistently opposed percentages associated with the trip limits. If you don't have a fixed amount, then you automatically compromise the ability to enforce the trip limits.
All right. I mean, I guess what I'm saying is I kind of agree. I mean, I could support the 300 pounds. That makes sense to me. It's something people can figure out. This percentage thing, I don't know. It just seems awful difficult to both to comply with from the fisherman's perspective and, as Pat said, to enforce, because you can only enforce it at the dock. I mean, once the fish are unloaded, it's irrelevant. All right, I think I've sort of got my questions answered. I think I at least understand what we're doing now. Phil?
Just to clarify the reason for the percentage, and we've had this conversation this year in considering the incidental limits, is that 300 pounds for some vessels of tails may actually present the opportunity for a directed fishery. And if everybody directed at 300 pounds, then we would probably have much more incidental catch total landed, and therefore have reduced opportunity for the directed fishery. And that would be that's the primary issue. This is truly an incidental limit. In other words, you're supposed to be out fishing for something else and keep monkfish that you caught, which is what the percentage is about. Not that you can have a 300-pound trip limit when you're not on a day at sea and a 470-pound trip limit when you are. So that's the basis for that. It's more to address the incidental catch aspect.
Anyone else on the council? Dave, were you done?
No, I understand what Phil's saying. What I'm saying is that from what we did originally with this plan years ago, the things that it bumps up against have changed so dramatically. I mean, 250 pounds of yellowtails, 25% of that for monkfish is, 62 pounds? I mean, we didn't have all these trip limits in the northern area when we put this 25% in. And it's almost impossible now to, you can't, you're saying don't fish for this, don't fish for, you can't fish for anything. I mean, everything's an incidental catch at this point. And at some point, we've got to address this if we're going to keep these percentages in there. Because it's just impossible to balance the books by anything short of what I consider to be sleight of hand, which is bringing in stuff that you have no intention of selling and dumping it over at the dock, which, you know, I just don't think that's the way we want to go.
Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, in light of what Phil just said, the dialogue between Phil and David, the Northern Fishery Management Area incidental limit recommendation, if indeed we don't go with the percentage of total weight on board, and I suspect we may not, I have concerns as well, and Pat, of course, has expressed her concerns, as have a few other people. Would the plan development team then have recommended, if the 25% was not in there, would it have recommended the 300 pounds being a lower number? I'm trying to look ahead a little bit to the discussions we'll have on this issue. If we get rid of the 25%, should we be looking at 200 pounds or 100 pounds? Again, to be consistent with the fact that this is supposed to be an incidental bycatch fishery primarily and not a directive.
This is a difficult issue to wrap around because you are trying to balance the desire to minimize discards with the desire to have an enforceable program and without creating a directed fishery under the guise of an incidental catch. So there is no perfect solution here. And I can't say what the PDT would have recommended because the PDT, a lower limit may very easily begin to increase discards. On average, vessels that caught less than 300 pounds of monkfish in the northern area in 2005 caught 75 pounds. Vessels that caught less than 400 pounds of tails in the northern area per day caught 92 pounds on average. In other words, it has been operating truly as an incidental limit and not as a directed fishery. If people were using that as a guise in a wide scale to direct on monkfish, we would have expected the distribution of catches to be bumping up against the incidental limit because they're all trying to get their 300 or their 400, okay? But that's not the distribution that we saw. We're seeing that it so far is working as an incidental catch. That is likely to change to a certain extent once days at sea and trip limits are imposed and a directed fishery is allocated a certain amount of time. Vessels that otherwise would have had no trip limit on their multi-species days will now be operating under either a monkfish trip limit or an incidental limit. The PDT acknowledges that we expect that distribution to change, but whether or not it will create a wholesale directed fishery under the guise of the incidental limit, I don't know. And clearly, the burden of having to transport these fish and discard them, while some people may do that, others may not do that. And we don't know whether or not that's going to be a significant problem or not. Probably some will do it, and probably some won't, and some might sometimes.
I think that covers all the possibilities. Anyone else on the council have any questions? Phil.
Yes, thank you, John. Just to the point of the percentage, I understand both sides of the argument. And having sat down to the Mid-Atlantic quite often, this comes up a lot. And in my mind, it's just as Phil said, it's very complicated, but so is everything we're doing nowadays. And we're getting further and further into this discarding and bycatch and all of these issues. This percentage is one of the tools that I think we're going to end up having to use because we're eliminating each fishery down to these little boxes by these little boxes, and you can't have this and you can't have that. If you don't tie it to this percentage, we're missing a great opportunity, I think, of addressing bycatch and discard problems. I mean, I understand the enforceability problems. I understand all of the arguments that we've had for the last, since I've been around, I guess, on the bycatch and trying to enforce the percentages and stuff. And I don't exactly know what the answer is. I think the VMS system is going to help you in some instances on that. You could do some reporting, to address it. There's a host of different opportunities that come with this. But to keep dismissing this percentage thing, I think is wrong. I think we need to start looking at how we can use that for a tool.
Thanks, Phil. We're kind of getting into debating the specific motions that we're going to go through that the committee has for us. So if there's not any more questions specifically for Phil's presentation or about the history of how we got to where we got to from the council, I'm going to go to the audience for a couple of comments. You have one, Jim?
Just one quick question. Do you know what the mortality rate is for discarded monkfish? Does anybody know?
No, and I'm sure it depends on a number of factors, just like everything else. What kind of gear came up in, you know, what if it's a bag or in a net, how deep it was, what the conditions of the water and the air are, you know.
Yeah, but there's never been any assumed number in this.
No assumed number, no.
Thanks.
Okay, anyone else on the council? Anyone in the audience? Steve. Steve, this isn't on any specific motion that the council is going to be debating. There's a question on the presentation or on the data.
Yeah, well, it's the 25% we've been talking about that Dave has a problem with. I just want to point out to the council that if you go offshore and you're trip gillnet fishermen, we're working on 20 to 30 cent pollock. It's very important to us to have a high species fish we can bring in to offset the costs of the cheap pollock that we're catching offshore. 25% is easy to work with. It's a little bit to get used to, but, you know, if we're catching 10,000 pounds of pollock, 20 cents is $2,000. It's not going to cover the expenses. The monkfish, a little bit of codfish and hake will make up the rest of the trip. It's important for us to have a 25%.
Okay. Thanks, Steve. Anyone else? Jim Kendall.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jim Kendall, New Bedford Seafood Consulting. I'm kind of unclear about one thing on the adding on a monkfish day to an A day at sea. Is this the right time to ask that question about how that would work?
Sure.
A multi-species vessel goes out, begins its trip, gets 2 days into the trip and starts catching monkfish. Before returning to port, he reports in via VMS that he's exceeded the limit for monkfish and has to declare a monkfish day at sea. How will those days at sea be accounted for? Will it be based on the weight on board or the days that he's been at sea?
It would be days at sea, and he would still be under a trip limit.
So if he went fishing and he exceeded the 1,200-pound limit, declared a monkfish day at sea, and he's been at sea for 4 days, but he only caught, say, 2,500 pounds of fish, he'd be charged four monkfish days? The entire trip, in other words, would...
It would be based on the days at sea for the trip, yes.
I'm not so sure that, you know, someone gets into it 1 or 2 days out of his trip that he's going to want to declare the entire trip as being an A and a monkfish day. I hadn't thought of it before until I started looking at it here. You may want
to... Well, the alternative to that is that they have to declare before they leave that they're going to be on a monkfish day. If they exceed the incidental limit, they have to discard those fish.
Yeah, I understand.
Or they have, yeah. If they don't catch their limit, well, they can either come in short or they can keep fishing even if it may not be the smartest thing to do that day.
All right, like I said, it may be something they want to get a little discussion on anyways, but thank you.
Thanks, Jim. Anyone else in the audience? Reggie.
In the early 90s, and a bunch of us went monkfishing to try to get away from the codfish, try to save and protect. We stayed monkfishing the whole time. Everybody said, the council said go, there's plenty of monks, blah, blah, blah. You get down to 470 pounds of tails a day is elimination of the Class D permit, which elimination of the fishery. You can't run a boat with three guys aboard for $1,000. It's impossible. It doesn't pay insurance. So if you're going to go to this weight for a Class D permit, you're going to force everybody to go back cod fishing, which we don't want to do. That's all there is. You might as well shut the fishery down right now. I said it in 95, shut the fishery down for 5 years. It'll work. Should have done it then. Do it right now. Shut this whole thing down because you're going to eliminate the workforce. There's nobody left. There's few guys that you get to work on boats today. This is the end of it, the end of a fishery, the end of an era. There's going to be no more. I'm going to tell my guys, if this goes through, you're out of a job. The boat's going to sit there and rot. You can't pay for anything with this weight. So once this goes through, 80% of the boats are going to be tied to the dock. There's going to be no one to work. If it comes, if you come back to a 100,000 metric ton take in 10 years, it's not going to matter. There's no one left. All there's going to be one fish plant left in each port. That's it. And if that's the case, that happens, fish are going to be worth 30 cents because no one's going to pay you like you get money through an auction house. It's not going to work. So my recommendation, if this goes through, 470 pounds for a Class D permit, unless you want everybody tagging the codfish, shut the fishery down. Put everybody on unemployment. At least be decent to these guys. This is gonna, everybody's going to lose their homes. Kids, my guys have kids in colleges. They're all done. It's not right. Phil just said that in the southern area we had the tack put down last year and it was a mistake. Now it's going up 2,000 metric ton. This is a mistake. Our catches go up yearly on these monks. Well, 4 or 5 years ago, in the first of September, the monks stopped. Everybody said, oh, the fishery's all over. There wasn't a monk landed until next May up here. And then they came back with so many monks, you didn't have to use the gear you're fishing. You're allowed to fish. But think about it. Guys are going to start losing homes. Kids are, they get no more colleges and everything else. Shut this thing down. At least let the guys go on unemployment or something. Thank you.
Ron.
Ron Smallwood, Fisheries Survival Fund. I have a question. I've been working for about the last 10 years trying to figure out what affects the catchability of monkfish and the scallop dredges. And I talked to at the ICES meeting with European gear people. They have a similar problem with their monkfish assessments using trawls. It's very complex. My question is, have you looked at another way, a relative index of abundance from the landings or catch per unit effort in some of the fisheries that are out there to determine a trend in abundance of monkfish?
Could you just repeat the last part? Have we looked at the relative exploitation in other fisheries?
Correct. For example, where it's this is an incidental fishery, so scallop dredges, for example, in closed area 2, we have high observer coverage, though they haven't really concentrated on monitoring monkfish. But over the period of 5 or 6 years, have you looked for swept area or bottom time what the catch rate of monkfish is?
Not on a fishery-by-fishery basis, no.
Okay, I would just strongly suggest, because this also ties into the standard bycatch methodology thing as well, is that we're going to really need a much more accurate idea of the trend in abundance of monkfish and that we have a good opportunity to look at the incidental catch rates in other fisheries that are not modifying their behavior based on monkfish catch. And I personally have seen an increase in monkfish in my dredge surveys on Georgia's Bank over the last 5 years. So I think you need to probably look at some alternatives here as far as this, the science. Thank you.
I think that's a good idea for a term of reference for the upcoming assessment. And in response to his last comment, I would point out that even though the indices have declined the last couple of years, they still are twice what they were 5-6 years ago. So, his observations can be borne out by the survey index that we have.
Anyone else in the audience? Okay, we're going to take a 10-minute break. When we come back, we're going to get into the motions and discuss them. Give you a moment to look at that. The actual document behind tab 10 is number 3. If you want to reference each decision and the alternatives that were presented to the committee. And in addition, there's two other motions that are part of document number 2 behind tab number 10. I'll give a little background on document number 2, the two motions contained on document number 2. The first was one we touched on briefly yesterday when we talked about the priority setting, specifically the Days at Sea leasing program that the committee looked at, the PDT looked at and debated. The committee had a motion that it wanted to bring to the council was to initiate Framework 5 for the purpose of implementing a monkfish day at sea leasing program for the 2009 fishing year. That is not part of the Framework 4 action that we're taking today. Rather, it's a separate motion. The second motion on document number 2 was a recommendation that the general category scallop vessels fishing within the exemptions granted under the groundfish plan be allowed the same monkfish incidental catch allowed in a small dredge fishery and other management areas. That is 50 pounds tail weight per day to a maximum of 150 pounds. That, as well, is not a motion that's contained within the Framework 4 action at this time. In other words, that's not a motion that, as the committee saw, would be included in Framework 4. Rather, it would be a separate action that could possibly become part of Framework 5, the next action on monkfish. The reason for that is that in order to grant that liberalization of landings for the general category scallop fishery would require a change in the groundfish regulations. That's why it's not part of Framework 4, which is a monkfish action. So I'll go back to document number 4, the 11 decisions. And I'll offer those up as one motion on behalf of the committee. That the council adopt the 11 decisions contained in the November 7th memo from the committee to the council for inclusion in Framework 4 to the Monkfish Plan. And because that's not a specific motion of the committee, I'll need a second. Seconded by John Nelson. So we're on document number 4 and the 11 decisions contained within. If anyone wants to make a move to discuss or amend one of the decisions, please do so. It's open to the council. Pat.
Well, I wanted to talk about decision 3 first, anyway, which is the recommendation by the committee to require days at sea in the northern fishery management area and to allow flipping, basically. That is, they can declare they can declare up to crossing the demarcation line on the way back a monkfish day at sea. And it's that latter portion of the provision that I'm concerned about. It seems to me that creates some fairly significant enforcement concerns, number one, that what it means is that people will be fishing with multi-species gear for the entire trip instead of monkfish gear, even if it turns out to be a monkfish day at sea. And so if in fact someone wanted to use multi-species gear instead of monkfish gear, all they have to do is not declare it until they get to sea and then decide it's a monkfish trip and that they have the opportunity to fish then with multi-species gear. And I think, frankly, it just adds to the complexity of a plan that's already impossible. And I'm going to raise that several times through this discussion. I don't think there's a person around this table, with the exception of maybe Allison, that could explain all the provisions of the monkfish plan. And we keep adding more and more layers of complexity. So I think we ought to be thinking about how to make it simpler and not how to make it more complex. And so I'm really struggling with this flipping option in here.
Phil, did you want to respond?
On the first point there, with the fact that the vessels can fish with monkfish, multi-species gear, and then end the trip as a monkfish trip, they currently do that. They fish as a multi-species vessel on a multi-species trip, and they have no monkfish trip limit. And so it's not going to be changing that aspect of it. So it may be a valid concern from an enforcement point of view, but I think when we write the regulations, we can clarify that that the gear applies as to what the vessel is fishing under at the time. And as far as adding to the complexity of the plan, I agree, everybody agrees this is a very complicated plan, but I would remind you that when we went through Amendment 2, one of the main objectives of the plan was to simplify it, and that went over like a lead balloon because it meant that everybody would be bulked together in larger groups with simpler rules, and there would be no accommodation of individual instances of incidental catch or various trip limits and so on. So it is complicated, but monkfish shows up in basically every fishery in one form or another, and this is how we have to accommodate that.
John Nelson.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. The question I have is, we've talked about this before, and in that when the regional administrator raises an issue of concern, is it a issue of concern that to the point where we really need to take heart and really pay attention to something that is not going to be approved because of that concern? So I just need to see the flag up, the red flag up, very clearly versus clarifications or for streamlining. I certainly appreciate the streamlining that we might want to try to do. But if there's really something out there that's going to be a real problem, I maybe it's just me this morning or whatever, I just need to have it hit over the head a little bit stronger and say, hey, I got a real problem with this, and I'm really uncomfortable with this one. So that's just to our process.
Go ahead, Pat.
Yeah, I can't tell you whether it's approvable or not. I'm looking to hear the council's discussion and rationale on it. I think it's a real problem, but that I'm not necessarily saying right off that it's clearly a fatal flaw.
Rip.
Thank you. I guess my question was sort of through you, Mr. Chairman, to Pat. Also, if decision 2 was adopted, then we were going with alternative 2 for, or so it indicates, for the remainder of the decisions. Would this mitigate your concern on decision 3?
Are you suggesting decision 2 is a moratorium on the directed fishery? Okay. Pat?
Well, if I understood if the council voted for decision 2, it would make all the other decisions unnecessary. So it would certainly alleviate that concern.
John?
Phil?
Just to clarify, and I probably, this just occurred to me as this conversation came up. I think the incidental limit in the northern area could still be up for discussion if decision 2, if that moratorium were adopted, and also the duration of that moratorium. Is it indefinite, or is it just through 2009? So those two items probably could still be discussed as separate items if decision two were adopted.
Rip.
Thank you. I guess my where my confusion comes is if for some reason we adopt everything under one motion, then what is the decision on decision two? That you do accept the moratorium or that you don't accept the moratorium?
The committee took no action on decision two. Therefore, the moratorium would not be accepted. Dr. Pierce.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to focus on the landings, the total allowable level of landings that the committee is offering up for our consideration in the northern area. That is the 5,000 metric tons. I need to get a clarification first regarding that. Specifically, that 5,000 tons seems to be, well, it's derived from Table 1 in the appendix. That's the range of TAC values for the northern stock. Again, that's page Roman numeral number 5 in the in that appendix to the framework. All of the different TACs calculated by different methods for the northern area as well as the southern, but I'm focusing on the northern now. They're shown in this table. And the median is 5. So that's why we're getting a recommendation for 5, which is a drop from 7.7 to 5, which is a rather significant drop. I guess my question is relative to that particular calculation. The question is that many of the numbers used to calculate that particular median are based on the fact that we're looking at landings data from 1963 through the current period. And I see that that means that we have concluded landings from 1963 through, well, let's say 1972, where there was no fishery. The fishery didn't begin. The landings weren't really significant until the mid-1980s. So I wonder if by using TACs calculated using those earlier years, I'm wondering if those TACs are really appropriate for us to consider because they factor in years when there was no fishery or landings were very minimal. So I guess the question to Phil would be, why did the plan development team feel it was appropriate to go all the way back to 1993 in its calculation of different options for the TACs? And then I'll have something else to say after Phil responds to that.
A couple of things. First of all, most of the numbers that are used in establishing the median do not go back to 1963. The only ones that do are the median relative exploitation times the three-year average exploitable biomass index for the last 3 years, the average relative exploitation times for that 1963 to 2005 period times the average exploitable biomass index for 03 to 05, 75% of the average catch from 63 to 2005, and the median catch of 63 to 2005. And I would point out that the numbers that are used there that go into the median probably have a median of about 5 because it's 2.7, 6.0, 5.0, I mean 4.3 and 4.3. So it seems to fall within the same range anyway as all of the other ones, which are independent of the 1963 time series. Secondly, we did look at a number of other methods in addition to the 9 that we ultimately settled on. And we looked at different landings periods where instead of the full time series. And we did look back at NAFO landings and so on to try and ascertain, some confidence in the earlier history time series and ultimately ended up with these numbers. We spent countless hours trying to decide which were the appropriate methods and consider all of the risks and uncertainties in all of the numbers, recognizing that we needed to come up with something. And I think that the validation of this approach that the PDT took is really evident when you look at, you flip a few pages later on page X of that same appendix and page XI, and you can see where the cluster of the nine estimates falls for each of these methods, many of which are independent of each other using different sets of data, and they all tend to cluster in a pretty tight range around 5. And I think that that was what ultimately validated this approach, given that we have no, you know, fishing mortality rates. There's all sorts of uncertainties in everything that we do on the scientific end of this fishery. But, you know, this does, in a sense, provide the validation.
All right. I really haven't got
And it certainly, I would acknowledge, it's very vulnerable to criticism, which is really easy to do. At the same time, there is no other alternative that is more that anyone has any more confidence in than what we've come up with here.
With that said, Frank, it's true. It's hard to know which options, M1 through M9, all the different TAC calculations using different approaches, it's hard to know which one makes no sense, which one is of very little value. Are they all of equal value? Therefore, they should all be averaged to give us, or a median should be taken to give us a specific value to use. I look at M2, for example, the average relative exploitation, 1963 through 2005 times the three-year average of exploitable biomass index, 2003 through 2005, that's M2, that gives us the northern stock TAC of 6,000 metric tons. To me, that seems attractive and defensible, and it's a decrease from 7.7 down significantly to 6.0. So I'm inclined to go with the 6.0 as opposed to the 5.0, representing a median of all of these individual calculations, some of which I don't feel particularly comfortable with. For example, the 3.9, the 75% times the median of the sensitivity analysis of the TAC. I really don't know what that means. So I would make a motion, Mr. Chairman, to amend the TAC for the northern stock to make it 6.0, which is the method M2 in Table 1 of the appendix.
Is there a second to that motion? Seconded by John Nelson. I'll just point out, before we debate this specific amendment, that I think another way to repackage what Phil said is that in the committee in meetings 2 and 3 and throughout all the PDT meetings, there was a lot of discussion about these specific alternatives that arrived at specific TALs, as you point out. And no one TAL recommendation on its own is as justifiable as the clustering that we arrived at, the 5,000 metric tons. And it's that grouping that lends itself to more defensibility when assigning a TAL to this fishery. But respect your right to argue otherwise.
Well, you just made an argument against my particular motion, Mr. Chairman. I don't believe that just because we have this range of options that provides us then with the basis for calculating what the TAC should be, that is, the median value of all of them. Because, again, as I said, some of these may not – I don't think they all have equal weight. Some perhaps are more believable than others. I feel more comfortable using the basis of M2, which is the average relative exploitation, 63 through 2005. And again, exploitation was very low during those early years, so it's not as if we're picking years that had high exploitation rates. Relative exploitation was extremely low during the earlier years, and you can see that from figure 5 in the appendix on page 10, Roman numeral 10. From 1963 through the early 1980s, we were very low in terms of relative exploitation, minimal, if almost zero. So we're factoring in already in that calculation many years of very low relative exploitation, and then applying that, of course, in a multiplying fashion against that three-year average of exploitable biomass from 2003 to 2005. I feel comfortable with that number. It represents, again, a significant drop from 7.7 down to 6.0, less dramatic than the one from 7.7 to 5.0. And I do tend to reflect, as I generally do, on consideration of socioeconomic impacts. Phil made note of that in his presentation. So with consideration of those impacts of our going to an entirely different approach for dealing with the northern stock, relative to how we've been managing it for the last, for many years, it seems to be a reasonable TAC to consider for the northern stock. Now, by the way, Mr. Chairman, I should also highlight that this is a very significant step that we're taking right now for monkfish because it has implications for what we'll do with groundfish species as we move down the road, meaning 2007, since many of our stocks that we manage right now in terms of our determining where they are relative to overfished, or is there overfishing, it's based on the albatross. So if indeed this range of TAC values is being calculated because we expect problems with calibration, having the Bigelow no longer the albatross, then we need to recognize that a similar approach will likely be considered by this council for calculating target TACs for those groundfish species. That's just kind of an aside, Mr. Chairman. It's given me cause to really reflect on where we're going with how we'll set the TACs down the road for those other stocks.
Paul.
The question, Mr. Chairman, is it the intent then with 6,000 tons to redo all the trip limits or merely use the 6,000 tons to fend off a backstop? So in other words, you have more likelihood of no backstop if you do it to 6,000, but let's use the same trip limits because it's not a hard tack. So what is the intent, to redo the trip limits or just avoid the backstop?
No, it's not to avoid the backstop, and it's the trip limits would stay the same.
The trip limits and the days at sea would stay the same. Okay, next, Ed. Dave, did you want to speak to this motion to amend?
No, my comment was to Pat's original question, so I don't know if you want to take that later.
I'll take that later. Any comments or questions on the motion to amend? Mike.
I don't recall if you were at the committee meeting, Dave, but we spent almost three-quarters of a day on this, and we started at one place in the morning, went all the way around and ended where we did. I was comfortable with this. I wasn't at the beginning, but I am now. My question to you is, are you going to just use an M2, the southern area TAC?
No, I wouldn't adjust the southern TAC. Again, I'm somewhat surprised that it's going up as high as it is, from 3.7 to 5.1, but I thought that Phil did a good job explaining the rationale for that increase. So we're going up from 3.7 to 5.1, but again, the northern stock going into a different management regime, it seems rather significant and too draconian to go from 7.7 to 5.0. Especially in light of where we stand with regard to the rebuilding curve.
Pat?
Yeah, I'm opposed to the motion. It doesn't make sense to me just to pick one based on, let me not say it that way. I think the council and the committee went, and the PDT, rather, and the committee went through a good deliberative process in deciding what the best tack is for this fishery, and the most justified given the limited information that's available in the fishery. And as I said, although I think the backstop is helpful, the problem with it is that it only speaks to the issue of whether the measures achieve the tax, and not whether the tax is set appropriately or not. And so I am concerned. We've got 3 years left in this rebuilding program. We're only at 50%. I am concerned about a balloon payment at the end of this.
John Nelson.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. When I looked at this, it seemed as if the for consistency's sake, and I'll keep mine very simple, on the southern range, we were seeing the fit basically around the mean. They call it the mean relative exploitation on page on X, figures 4 and 5 is what I'm looking at. But the estimates of TAC basically were slightly below, maybe a little bit above that mean value. On the northern landings, the TAC was more around the medium as far as the pick, where if you look at the graphic, the mean landings line that runs through that has some above and a number of them below. So if we're using mean for one, and why not use the mean for the other, is what, when I looked at this, it seemed like a reasonable approach. And you're still looking at over a 30% reduction in the from the landings that you had in 05. So for consistency, that's how I looked at it. For the mean, it's still below what some of these targets would be by these different methods. So I think it may fit fairly well.
Mark Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't support this motion. I would refer the board to the council to table one. There's a big difference between, excuse me, M1 and M2. And the M2 is based on an average, whereas M1 is based on a median. And what's happening is there's a very strong skewed distribution of these relative exploitation rates. And you can see that in Figure 5, where there's 4 points at or above 20,000. I'm not sure what the units are, but the 20,000 relative exploitation, they're driving that long-term average. For that reason, I think it's too liberal attack in view of the downward trajectory, the abundance trend, and the rebuilding target you have to get to. It's notable that there were outliers dropped from the southern stock area in these computations, but not those, and I think that's why there's such a difference, a doubling of the TAC under an M2 versus the M1 median process. So those reasons, I wouldn't support this motion.
Gene Martin.
I just wanted to follow up just to clarify for the council to Paul's question. If changing the TAC doesn't change the backstop calculation, I think that's the answer. I mean, the way it's written now, the backstop calculation is based on what the TAC is. So by definition, it would affect that. And I don't know about the trip limits. I presume they're based on what the TAC projections are too. Or in days at sea, they're not calculated to try to achieve that level. If it's a higher level, it would still automatically remain lower. Those aren't based on, at least the backstop would be affected by this.
Anyone else in the council? All right, I'm going to call the question. The motion to amend to adjust the total allowable catch for the northern stock to 6.0 method M2 and table 1 in the appendix. All those in favor, raise your hand. 1, 2, 3. 3 opposed. Motion fails. Back to the main motion. Jim.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like some clarification on how we deal with the decision number 2. As the motion reads, if I understand what your directions were, because that decision wasn't a recommendation of the committee that it would not be part of the package that you would pass. If the motion were passed, are you saying that it would not include decision two? And if so, it would be simple. I think we should reword the motion to say that we would be
You're
motion.
Adopting the motions recommended by the committee, basically, not.
So it would be decisions 1 and 3 through 11 of the document, is that?
Right. Well, there was no motion on behalf of the committee with decision 2.
Okay. So the motion just reflected.
You're suggesting to just either strike decision 2. You're wondering why there's even a mention of decision 2 in the main motion.
Right. The main motion says to adopt decisions 1 through 11, and if your direction is...
With the exception, well, right. So you'd have to essentially either renumber them or make notes.
How you do it, I don't care. I just want to make sure that that's not going to be part of the decision.
Well, decision 2 in this document says that the committee takes no action on a moratorium. So, Dave, we're back on the main motion I had you before.
Yeah, I wanted to address Pat's first point about why you're going to need this call-in system or flip provision, whatever you want to call it. And it gets back to this 25% and the 300 pounds. You have a lot of vessels now that are going to be considered directed monkfish boats. They're going to be over the 25% but under the 300 pounds. And that's because the trip limits in the northern area for everything are so low. I'll give you an example. I just use myself because that's what I know best. In October, with the Dogfish closed, 250 pounds of yellowtails, 60 pounds of blackbacks, and 125 for 130 pounds of monktails. I'm over the 25%, way under the 300 pounds. But now I'm going to have to declare a monkfish day at sea. I'm not going to know that going out because the monkfish go up and down every day, as do the flounders. I mean, some days they didn't have the 250 yellowtails, and I had more monkfish. Other days I had hardly any monkfish, but I had the yellowtails. I mean, you're just not going to know until you've caught the fish. You know, in other words, it's not the directed gillnet fishery that you're discussing where you're saying, well, people might go out and use, I don't know, 6.5-inch gillnets to target monkfish. It's people that are just out there fishing that because of the trip limits now on everything that they can catch are going to bump up against this. Now, if the Dogfish was open year-round and you had 600 pounds a day, it probably wouldn't be an issue. You had higher trip limits on some of the flounders. But, I mean, it isn't as simple as, say, well, go catch some dabs of graysal. There aren't any within the area that I fish in. I mean, I haven't had 10 pounds of dabs all fall and maybe 50 pounds of graysal. You know, the only other thing I can go target is cod. And you say, don't do that. So, I mean, we got to fish for something. And the fact is we're trying to do what everybody's asked us to do, which is not target this, that, and the other thing and just catch some high-value fish in relatively low amounts. And now you're saying, well, you know, you're going to have to declare a monkfish day at sea, or that's the potential implication of the comment. You'll have to declare it in advance. And the other alternative is that when you go over the 25%, you're going to have to throw the monkfish back. And you know, I've tagged a lot of fish, and opportunistically, we tagged some monkfish. I don't believe we've ever had a monkfish return. I'm not saying that means that all the monkfish died, but it's been my experience with throwing monkfish back, because I throw them back in the whiting fishery because I'm not allowed to have them there anymore in a raised foot rope trawl. I've never seen one swim away. I just see them sink away. So I'm pretty sure that the monkfish discard mortality is pretty high. And so I think we want to be very careful that we don't increase discards and just say, well, we solved our landings problem, therefore we've solved our monkfish problem. I think all we will do, you know, we may have solved our landings problem, but we won't have solved our monkfish problem at all. And that'll be reflected 2 or 3 years down the road. And when we haven't got to where we need to be, and even more drastic action is necessary. Thank you.
Pat?
Well, I appreciate that explanation, and I do think that all of this is going to change how people make decisions and their fishing behavior, like any management program does. But I also think that it does undermine the enforceability, which goes directly to the effectiveness of the program. If we're taking decision two off the table, then I think we need to be as conservative as possible because there are only 3 years left in this rebuilding program. So I would actually, I would offer a motion to amend, that consistent with the southern fishery management area, vessels in the northern fishery area be required to declare a monkfish day at sea prior to crossing the demarcation line after leaving port. And I think it's likely to reduce discards because it's going to force people to decide ahead of time that they are or they aren't targeting monkfish. And I understand that you say that that's difficult, but then the end result will be that somebody will err on the side of precaution and declare the monkfish day at sea and then bring the monkfish home. So that's my motion.
Is there a second? Seconded by Mark Gibson. Discussion on the amended motion. Mike Leary, then Jim Alden.
I oppose this motion. We went through this on the committee, and we thought it was best to declare on the way in. There's huge safety implications on this, and you get a multi-species otter trawl fleet that fishes upwards of 150 days a year now, and if they're reduced to 31 days of monkfish at 1,250 pounds, and you get to declare before you leave, it won't even be a fishery. You'll talk about huge discards once the 31 days are over.
Jim.
Yeah, I oppose this motion to amend. I believe this will encourage the directed fisheries. If somebody declares prior to going out, they're going to make sure they catch every monkfish they're allowed. They will target them, make sure they get them. If we do it the other way, they'll be targeting their normal fisheries or maybe targeting haddock, and if they do happen to catch more than the bycatch of monkfish, then they would flip and utilize the day that way. So I believe that this particular motion will increase discards and increase the directed fisheries on monkfish.
Rip. Oh, no. Terry.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I oppose this motion, and Mike gave a pretty good summary of the discussion of the committee that led to decision three. We felt that 31 days at sea was a significant reduction for a fleet currently that has no monkfish days at sea or trip limits, and a huge concern for discards that this might provide, particularly if a vessel left port and didn't know what they're going to land. And thought that the 31 days with the 1,250 pounds would be, we equated it to an analogy of an A-plus day. You have your A day, and then you want to burn it a monkfish day to land the 1,250 pounds over the 300. It was going to do the job.
Paul Harrick.
Has there been any analysis of the flipping program and the multi-species fishery and that we could learn from that, if there's been any, how effective it is?
I don't know, but maybe somebody from the regional office is aware.
Well, what we know is that the rate of flipping is much lower on unobserved trips than on observed trips, which goes back to my point.
Mike?
We went over this at the committee, too, about flipping. It's not a flipping. It's an endorsement. It's not a flip because your A days are still going to go away also. It's not the same. Your A day is always going to be used, and you're endorsing it with a monkfish day. You're not flipping. You're endorsing it. Well, a B day, if you don't flip a B day, you don't burn an A day. Is that correct? Yeah, I don't want to debate it. We went around. Flipping is not the right terminology.
Anyone else to the amended motion?
John? Just briefly, to inform the council that the committee talked about but did not consider allowing a vessel to go out on a B day under the incidental limit, flip to an A day, and then declare a monkfish day. If they start the trip on a B day, then they cannot flip to a monkfish day through that process.
Any other comments? Okay, I'm going to call the question. All those in favor of the motion to amend, raise your hand. Put your hands up again. I'm going to start the count over. One, two, three, four, five. Five opposed. Okay, motion to amend fails. Back on the main motion. Jim Odlin, I had you on the list previous. Are we all set? Anyone else from the council? Dave Gaethel.
Yeah, I'd like to ask a question of Phil through you, Mr. Chair, if I might. Phil, when you analyzed the percentage and the trip limit, did you analyze any other combinations, like, say, 50% and 300 pounds or 50% and 200 pounds or, I don't know, whatever?
On the incidental limit?
Right. What will trigger all this in the northern area or the southern area?
No, we looked at the current no-action alternative and the pre-existing incidental limit, and just offered those.
Okay, so you didn't, as an example, look at, say, 50% and 200 pounds or something like that?
No.
Anyone else on the council? Pat?
Yeah. On the endorsement program, under decision 5, I think it is. Oh, that is decision 5. It's a motion under decision 5, right. I have similar concerns with this. This seems to me to be just a lack of making a decision more than anything. They're both very close in terms of the trip limits and the days at sea. This effectively, by allowing this enrollment program, it effectively eliminates at-sea enforcement. Trip limits are already difficult to enforce. If you take away at-sea enforcement, you take away the primary mechanism for enforcing these. So, John, for your benefit, this is a flag. This is a big red flag. Okay. My recommendation is to remove the enrollment program and choose one or the other of the alternatives for trip limits and days at sea.
Anyone on the council? Phil.
I just have a question for Pat to clarify what she meant, because my understanding is that at the beginning of the year, and the ultimate process hasn't yet been decided, but a vessel would either get a permit or a letter of authorization indicating that they could fish under one, you know, under one, if not the default applies. We have other programs where those things occur, so maybe she could just explain what she means by why it would be unenforceable at sea. You'd be under a trip limit if you had that appropriate permit or that letter of authorization. You could fish with the lower trip limit and more days.
Because the default is the higher trip limit. And so the assumption is going to be that someone can have the higher trip limit. I think it's going to be difficult to have a mechanism whereby someone doing at-sea enforcement or at the dock enforcement, for that matter, can know when they're checking the boat that this particular boat should have the lower trip limit.
That would preclude then probably the letter of authorization, but if they were issued a permit that specified what the trip limit was for that year, would that concern still exist?
I think it still exists, and I think it still adds unnecessary confusion to the process and complexity.
Any Anyone on the council want to tackle this issue? Phil.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I understand Pat's concern with it, but as Phil said, in my mind, we already have it. You had the F permit. I mean, you change from a classification permit when you sign into it at the beginning of the year to declare into an F, and now my permit says this is what I am and this is what I'm allowed on a AAA basis for the year. So, I mean, it's, in my estimation, we already kind of have something like this, and this is just, you know, another option and stuff that is available. So,
Dr. Pearson.
Well, consistent with Pat's concerns, I would move to amend the motion at Decision 5. Well, for Decision 5, amend the motion to delete the enrollment program allowing vessels the ability to select into Alternative 2 at the start of the fishing year. The effect of this amendment, if it was to be adopted, would be to keep the first part of the committee motion, which is to go with Alternative 1, no action, as the preferred alternative.
Is there a second to that motion?
Seconded by Rip Cunningham. Discussion on the motion to amend.
No discussion. Okay. All those in favor of the motion to amend to delete the optional enrollment program in Decision 5, raise your hand. Opposed? 2 opposed. The motion carries. The main motion as amended is now on the screen for discussion. Okay, I'm going to go to the audience. Pat?
Just one more. This is a simple one. I promise. Under Decision 11, I think we just need to to clarify that this applies only to limited access scallop vessels. So it's a clarification question more than anything.
Phil, can you chime in?
Well, this came up as we were, you know, finalizing the document following the last committee meeting, and I think my understanding is that was everybody's understanding at the meeting, although it didn't come out in the motion. And there are people here that were at the meeting from the industry and from the AP, and so if somebody understands differently, they might want to speak up. But I think this whole thing was brought up in the context of the limited access vessels. General category scallop vessels have a specified incidental limit already.
Paul.
The issue of not including steaming time, we've gone round and about in groundfish and have never tackled that because of the problems associated with it. Aren't the same problems associated with steaming time and computing and all that with the scallop fishery?
There was some discussion of that. My understanding is that when they enter the closed area in the closed area access program, that begins some sort of a situation where, you know, I'm not that familiar with it, but apparently it didn't seem to be an obstacle, but maybe somebody from enforcement or from the Days at Sea program, VMS program, can clarify that. But it's a way of tracking the days when they're in, the time when they're in there, because there really is a desire not to create a directed monkfish fishery out of this, but to allow the legitimate incidental catch to be kept instead of discarded.
Any other comment on that issue? Pat?
Well, I think the issue is that this is a liberalization from the previous trip limit, so it's not consistent with the how the program worked in the past. It does, in fact, allow the scallopers to land more monkfish.
Any more comments on that? So.
I think I just got confused. All right.
For the record, that was backwards. Anyone else on the council? Okay, I'm going to go to the audience. Ron Smolowitz, then Maggie.
Ron Smolowitz, Fisheries Survival Fund. Actually, if in fact it's limited to when they enter the area, it's actually not a liberalization. It's the opposite. Because up now, previously we were allowed to land 300 pounds a day, up to 3,000 pounds from a closed access trip because it was counted as 10 days. So this, in fact, is an improvement over the 150 pounds that we're trying to replace, but it still does not bring us back to where we were. It's still a substantial cut because a closed area trip, even closed area two, might be 6 days. So that would be 1,800 pounds under this proposal as opposed to 3,000. So 1,200 pounds would be discarded. And the argument that a scallop vessel will target monkfish on a scallop day is there's no merit to that whatsoever. The economics are not there at all.
Maggie?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maggie Raymond, Associated Fisheries of Maine. I'm also the chair of the Monkfish Advisory Panel. I just have some comments on the Maine motion, the motion as a whole. I want to point out to everybody who may not have been following this plan since the beginning that this is going to result in a huge change in the fishery in the northern fishery management area. For the state of Maine, monkfish represents a third of the revenues that come from the groundfish fishery. And to go from no trip limits at all to these restrictive trip limits is going to have very serious impacts on fishing families who involved in the groundfish fishery. Probably the worst thing about this plan is that at the end of the 3 years, we won't know whether these changes have actually done anything to improve the status of the resource. The only thing that will be certain is what the impacts are on fishing families. Having said that, I think that under the circumstances, the committee did the best job that they could with the options that were on the table. So, with a couple of exceptions, which I'll get to afterwards. But as I said, under the circumstances, you know, these recommendations that the committee came up with, we feel we can support. We do, because monkfish is so valuable. We do want to see this resource rebuilt in the time frame and enjoy the benefits of that later. I just wanted to point out when the discussion was going on about the percentage with the incidental catch that particular provision has been a part of this plan since the beginning, and it has not been an issue, an issue for the fishery. And, perhaps it has been with enforcement, but I'm not aware of any violations that have been issued on that. The only things that I wish that the committee had, which they didn't address, which I wish they had, are the issue of the bycatch and the general category fishery. I brought that up at the first meeting that the committee had. I understand that it's a groundfish action, but I do, as I recommended back then, I think this could have been easily a joint groundfish, monkfish action, and we could have handled that quite easily. The other issue is that the committee decided in June not to even consider any kind of days at sea leasing program, and so then when they reconsidered that in September, it was too late to include one in this framework in order to get it in on time. And I really have a problem with that because, as I said, this is going to represent a huge change for the economics in the northern fishery management area, and this framework has nothing for you to even consider as potentially mitigating net impacts because the committee did not develop something. You could have always voted no on it today, but now you have nothing to vote on in that regard. And so I think that's, very, very unfortunate, and I hope that you will take that into consideration when you consider the recommendation that was ultimately made by the committee, which is that you initiate a framework to begin that program so that we can try to mitigate some of the economic impacts of this very significant change in the plan. Thank you.
Harriet? Okay. David Frula?
David Frula for the Fisheries Survival Fund. Just to follow up on Mr. Smolowitz's point, and I won't take long, there was no conscious decision that I recall by the council to make the monkfish possession limits more conservative. What happened was in Framework 18, NIMS redrafted, and I think you all are familiar with this, the access area rules to separate them from days at sea, and a consequence that wasn't discussed until a small entity compliance guide came out on August 1st, was that that was going to adjust the monkfish possession limits in the scallop access areas. So there's been no conscious decision by the council either way. This is just bringing it back toward the middle a little bit, and we appreciate the work that the committee and the council have done in considering this issue rapidly, as this is the one monkfish vehicle to get this fixed in the next few years. Thank you.
Anyone else in the audience? Okay, back to the council. We're on the main motion as amended. Any further discussion? Jim.
I think it'd be important to correct the language in that to reflect your earlier decision to include decisions 1 and 3 through 11, just so we have the clarity in the record.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. That language appears to achieve that goal in the parentheses. Okay. Any further discussion? All those in favor of the main motion as amended, please raise your hand. Opposed. Motion carries unanimously with one abstention. We have two other motions to consider under monkfish. If you turn to behind tab 10 to document number 2. I'll take these up one at a time. Again, document number 2 behind tab number 10. Paul.
We started this annual priorities because we were constantly in the middle of the year changing stream and starting management actions and stuff. And I think we've been pretty consistent staying with our annual planning process. And I thought we'd discussed this already and that it didn't fall above the line. So I don't think it's really appropriate to vote on this. However, when it appears there's going to be a monkfish assessment in 2007, the fall of 2007, so that's a perfect time to address rebuild, and most likely we'll have to take action for that to adjust one way or the other. So that's a perfect time to add leasing to the mix when you look at it for 2008 priorities. But I don't know what you'd do if you... what do you do if you approve this now and say, what does it mean if you buy into our planning process?
Well, my opinion is this was a motion that the committee asked that I bring forward to the council. Now, I think what's appropriate is for me to forward it on behalf of the committee and then hopefully, based on the decisions we made yesterday, this motion will fail. but so I'm going to do that. We can have an explanation associated with that as well. So I move on behalf of the committee to recommend the council initiate Framework 5 for the sole purpose. It should be up there. Okay. Again, it's document number 2 behind tab 10. As Paul brought up yesterday, we chose our priorities for the next calendar year, and we did have a discussion about this issue, the day at sea leasing program for the Monkfish management plan. And the PDT and the committee did look at this issue, and the sense is that we need to have 1 year of operating in the Northern Fishery Management Area under days at sea in order to have a concept of how a leasing program could work in the northern area. Jim?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to, make a substitute motion to that of the committee motion, and that would be that the council in the next Monkfish framework or amendment that the council that will include a Monkfish days at sea leasing program, or consideration of a days at sea leasing program. The purpose of that is to eliminate the obvious conflict that we would be directing the council to do something that we have put on a lower priority at this time, but in anticipation of the next Monkfish action that we would include consideration of a days at sea leasing program. Thank you.
Okay, seconded by Phil Rule. Any discussion on that? Phil Herring.
Just to clarify, that does not have any comment about subsequent to a year under days at sea in the northern area. So if they start something in January of 2008, that we really won't have the days information until June or so. That action could take a little longer if it's the next action. But if it's the first action subsequent to a year under days at sea, it might be clear. Because, we don't, it's just a thought. I mean, the whole point in this was to get a little more certainty on the effort picture in the north in terms of having a full year of data under, at least 1 year is what the PDT recommended, under days at sea.
Paul Howard.
Yeah, but I think that if we accept we're going to have a survey or assessment in 2007, that what we're basically saying, this will it'll be priority listings in November of 2007 to start a Monkfish leasing framework and perhaps adjustment based on the assessment to begin January 2008. That it'll compete for priorities next November. That's all we're saying.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else on the council? John Nelson.
Yeah, just to follow up with what Paul was saying, certainly I don't object to the intent of trying to get this off the burner, so to speak, and get it going. But is that the right process? Is it fully understood that okay, we're passing something now that says we'd like to have this as a priority. But the realization is that when the action plan or the work scope is looked at, whenever, that it's part of a wish list, and as long as people understand that they're not voting for something that's going to become reality, but it's going to be part of the wish list. I just want to make sure that's what's understood, rather than we voted something and it should happen, Although, it is the full council voting. So is my interpretation correct, Paul, that this is something we'd like to have happen, but it's a wish list. It's one of the wish list items.
Tom Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to oppose the motion only because I don't believe we can bind a future council action. As much as I agree with allowing some kind of transferability, I'm not sure this is the right method. I think this is just adding another complexity on top of complexities that are already too complex. I think that the comment that was made earlier by somebody in the audience about basically the cost disincentives for participating in the fishery, I think we really need to take that to heart. Regardless of what the proper number is, we're creating incentives in the fishery to be uneconomical to fish. That should be the last thing we're doing, and I would encourage us to not keep piling on to the disincentives to go fishing. And I would encourage us to think clearly about that as we're talking about groundfish tomorrow and about what we're doing in the future. I just don't believe that to keep doing more of the same stuff that we've been doing for years is leading us to success. We need to be more clear-sighted than that, even if it's difficult. Thank you.
Anyone else in the council? Jim?
Just for a point of clarification, in response to John's comments, it's my intention that this would be put up, that this would be part of whatever action, for example, it goes to committees, the committee structures what you're going to do, that would be something that the committee considers putting in, and that at some point it would be brought to the council for its consideration. It does not in any way bind the hands of the council to do that. It just says that in our next monkfish action, that will be one of the potential actions that could be taking place in that action. Thank you.
Dr. Pierce.
Yes, I will oppose the motion, primarily because I don't believe that any days at sea leasing program for monkfish will be conservation neutral.
Any other comment on the motion as amended? Okay, all those in favor of the motion as amended, raise your hand. Seven opposed. Eight. Motion fails. 7-8. Back on the main motion. Any further comment on the main motion? Okay, all those in favor of the main motion, raise your hand. And opposed. Six. Motion passes 10-6. Okay, we had one other motion that the committee forwarded to the council. It's motion number two on item number two behind tab 10. It's to recommend that the general category scallop vessels fishing within the exemptions granted under the groundfish plan be allowed the same monkfish incidental catch allowed in small dredge fisheries and other management areas, that is 50 pounds tail weight per day to a maximum of 150 pounds. Phil?
Yes, this motion does not include any mechanism for making that adjustment, and I don't think we know for certain whether that could be done under the regional administrator's authority with regards to exempted fishery rules or if that one has to be done by the council as an adjustment to the multi-species regulations. That's unknown at this point.
Paul.
I just go back to that last vote just quickly. And can we review what we approved? Did we approve that we're going to initiate a framework now? So we're going to initiate a framework. So that means I've got to change staff, and I don't have enough staff to do a framework unless we drop something below the line, if that's what we voted on. I'm a little confused.
John, I think I can clarify. I think when the committee discussed this, they acknowledged that it probably isn't even going to make the priority list this year, but it starts the marker so that when we do put monkfish above the line again, we've started the framework and there's no delay in furthering this along. I don't think the people that supported this, even in the industry, and they can correct me if I'm wrong, anticipated that this motion would get the council to put monkfish above the line and start working on it next year, because it even says we have to wait a year of days at sea to get something in for 2009. That's not the motion. It was the one about the days at sea leasing. It's for the 2009 fishing year. That's 2 years away, and we're going to have a year under days at sea before that happens. So I don't think that there's any expectation that there'll be action on this framework, at least in 2007.
You know, we should have changed the wording then. You're saying there that we're going to initiate a framework, and the council will vote on that, what gets done, next November. And so the wording, if everyone's got the same intent that this is going to have to compete like everything else, and we shouldn't initiate a framework before we decide what's going to be done in 2008.
John.
Well, Mr. Chairman, being on the prevailing side and not wishing to disrupt the process that we have for the work plans that we develop, I would move to reconsider.
Is there a second? Seconded by Tom Hill.
Again, I think the intent, I thought the intent was to plan ahead maybe you assume too much, but, I'm assuming this is going to be within the overall scope of work that we're going to approve. All of these things can come up as the items on the wish list. And so the language probably needs to be modified really to reflect the fact that we would recommend that this be a consideration for the action plan of 2008. Is that correct on the timing, Phil?
Yes, as long as there's a recognition that we're going to get a full year of days at sea data before we actually, can get into it in any substance. And that would be not on January 1 of 2008, but sometime following the end of the fishing year.
I think the language that I've got up there, it would be a consideration if there's other activities or issues that are associated with it's not the right time to do it, then we would take that into consideration at this time. So that would be my amended motion.
Let's vote on the motion to reconsider and then.
I'm sorry. I am getting way ahead of myself. I gave my explanation, so I won't even speak for the next time.
Okay. You front-loaded. All those in favor of reconsidering the previous motion, raise your hand. Fourteen opposed. One. Motion to reconsider passes. John,
my amendment is up, Mr. Chairman.
Is there a second to the amendment? Should probably clarify what the term this refers to.
Okay. That the is it the previous motion or the motion beneath? Whatever the language is.
The reconsidered motion.
Thank you. The reconsidered motion be a consideration for the action plan of 2008.
Is there a second? Seconded by Tom Hill. Discussion, Jim Salisbury.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Part of the reason for my previous motion, which would have accomplished the same thing, I believe, but what was also that this previous motion refers to solely for the consideration of a leasing program. And I don't think we want to have one solely for the consideration of a leasing program, so I would ask that the maker of this motion that the sole consideration of a leasing program be deleted. This wants to be included in whatever other considerations are done with Monkfish as well, not solely for the consideration of a leasing program. Thank you.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with that. I'm just trying to see what the language is. Let me try and get the language up there, then we can just vote on this, because my sense is that, that it would be the executive committee coming up with the overall action plan for us to consider. Jim, and that the reconsidered motion be I'm not sure what other action we what other language to put in there to address what has been suggested. So I would suggest, Mr. Chairman, that I'm going to remove my amendment, and I'm going to just suggest we reconsider that motion that was previously passed. It's on the table for reconsideration. I would have entertained a debate for that now. So the amendment has been removed if the seconder agrees.
Okay, so we're back on. I'm a little lost at this point.
We're on the reconsidered motion.
We voted and approved to reconsider what is motion one, and that's now what we're discussing, is motion one on number two?
Right.
Okay. Jim?
Well, it seems probably the most expedient way to deal with this might be to reconsider the previous motion that failed, which was the original motion made. And being on the losing side, I can't do that.
Karen, could you scroll back up to...
Just focus down and be done with it.
The motion, I think that's it there. Tom, I had you next.
I think we're making more of this than we need to. I, quite frankly, made an error in my last vote. I did not intend to vote for this item. I, quite frankly, made a tactical error by not paying attention to what was on the screen. I don't believe that we ought to be trying to bind the council to future action. If the council feels strongly at our next priority setting that we ought to do this, then we will do it. If the council does not feel strongly that we ought to do it, it won't. And these kind of procedural, this looks good, but it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean a thing. We've done this over the years. It doesn't. It's burning up time that is not being used to good purpose. I don't believe that we necessarily do a leasing program. I'm not opposed to them, but maybe there's a better way of looking at this. I'm tired of being stuck in the same box, and I would encourage us. I'm going to vote against this motion this time, and I suspect there may be others. It will just free the executive committee to bring back priorities next year as they think are important, and the council will debate it, just like we always do.
Dr. Pierce.
Okay, I need to make sure I understand where we are. We're not back on the motion that failed, the motion to substitute. We're back on the main motion. We're reconsidering that. So that would be motion number one, that was made on behalf of the committee. That's in document number 2. Am I correct? That's where we stand right now.
Correct. We're reconsidering motion 1, document number 2.
Okay. Okay, I would move then to amend to delete the words "to the extent possible." Again, I don't know what that means. Any consideration of a day at sea program, to my way of thinking, must be conservation neutral. To the extent possible is very uncertain to me, and it's very inconsistent with my own philosophy with regard to days at sea leasing, which I think enables fishing mortality to rise, fishing effort to rise. As I said before, it's very difficult, if not impossible, to be conservation neutral with a days at sea leasing program. At a minimum, I would like to have the language deleted.
Okay, I'll ask for a second, and then I have a comment to make. Is there a second to that? Seconded by Sally McGee. It seems to me that we reconsidered this motion. We didn't want to reset priorities. That's the reason we did it. We went through the priority process yesterday. There's an intent inherent in this motion that came out of the committee. We've debated it here at the council, which is that there's a strong desire on the part of some to have consideration of leasing in the next monkfish action that we take. Or we don't want to initiate a framework today or any time this year because it didn't make it into our priorities. The concept that the next monkfish action we take, there wouldn't be advocates for consideration of a days at sea leasing program. The concept that that would happen, that nobody would step forward and ask us to consider a days at sea leasing program, are slim to none in my opinion. People are going to stand up and advocate for a days at sea leasing program or consideration of it in the next monkfish action. Perhaps the best way to get out of this whole mess is to just vote this motion down and we'll deal with it in priorities next year. Okay, we're on the reconsidered.
Well, it was second.
Okay, so on the amended motion.
Well.
So essentially,
my sense is that you were declaring this out of order, and for the reasons that you talked about, and you wanted to get to the main motion for a vote up and down.
Well, I had a motion to amend. I took the second and then made my comments. I think if people agreed with my comments, then they will vote this amendment down and vote the main motion down and move on. All those in favor of the motion to amend, raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4. Opposed? 12. The motion to amend fails. We're back on the main motion. All those in favor of the main motion? 1. Opposed? 14. Motion 15. Motion fails, 1-15. Okay. We did have motion number 2 on the board and before we got sidetracked. Phil, could you go back and say what you said before we got sidetracked, just to put people back?
What I'm said is we haven't gotten guidance, or I don't know the answer, I missed it, whether or not, if this passes, this could be a change done by the regional administrator through the authority for the exempted fishery program, or if it would require regulatory action by the council through the groundfish FMP. But other than that, I think that's all I said, really. We don't know which way, how it would be done, in other words.
John.
Just a question for the committee. Did they discuss where we're cutting back substantially on monkfish activity, incidental catch, et cetera, why we would then increase for another category?
To go back through the notes. Maggie?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As the issue that I raised to the committee several months ago was that whenever the council takes any kind of regulatory action, it has an obligation to mitigate, to the extent practicable, discards. That's what this action would do, by allowing those vessels that are catching one or two monkfish in the general category fishery to land it as opposed to discarding it. There was some discussion earlier about mortality of monkfish. I don't think there should be any question about the mortality of monkfish in a scallop dredge. So that was the argument that I made to the committee several months ago. I still think it's a valid argument that it should have been addressed in Framework 4, because it is there is a occasional catch of one or two monkfish in this fishery, and they're being discarded. Thank you.
Gene.
Yeah, just to follow up on Phil Herring's comment, just to make this clear, this isn't being added to Framework 4, this motion. I think what this motion is intended to do is to ask the regional administrator to change bycatch limits on exempted fishery. I think it's important just for the council to understand exactly what's being asked here and to know that this isn't a Framework 4 action. This is a separate action, I believe, to ask the regional administrator to I guess, unilaterally change an exempted fishery provision for the general category dredge fishery. In other words, an exemption from the regulated mesh area requirement. And if that's not right, I guess it would be helpful for someone to clarify exactly what's being requested here.
Yeah, no, the committee's recommending that this change be made, and it's leaving it up to whomever to indicate how that change could be done. I said it may be that it's done by the regional administrator through that exempted fishery authority, or based on the advice of the regional administrator or general counsel, that it be done as a add-on to the next groundfish action, and so that it's a council decision to do that. If the council is recommending it, it can either be done by the regional administrator if the authority is there, or it would have to be considered as a part of another rulemaking.
Seems that what's at the heart of this discussion is what's the appropriate way to get this done. If the council wants this to happen, then an alternative or suggestion would be that we ask the regional administrator to do it. If the regional administrator doesn't want to do it, they will indicate why and how a change of this nature would have to come back to her and what vehicle or what form. That's just as a suggestion if you do vote positive for this motion. Is that clear? Sort of. We don't know where to stick this thing. Dave.
I got some problems with this, quite frankly. I mean, we just went and cut drastically all these other fisheries. Now we're going to say to this one, okay, all of a sudden now you can keep them and you couldn't before. If we were doing this for the sake of consistency, and basically that meant we were saying all the incidental catch fisheries were allowed 50 pounds and deal with it that way, that would be a lot different to me. Because right now we got a hopeless hodgepodge of regulations. If you're in the whiting fishery in Area 1, you can't keep monkfish with a raised foot rope trawl. If you're in Cape Cod Bay, you can't keep them. If you're in southern New England, you can keep them. If you're in a general category, scallop category, in some fisheries you can keep them, in some you can't. The fact is we've all been saying for the last 3 hours, is monkfish are caught in everything. No matter what kind of gear you use, you know, a couple of them flip into something, you know. I always wondered how they got in a raised foot rope trolley. I could tell they must leap up in the air and bite the foot rope as it goes by and then flip over it. But, you know, we have documented cases of them being in there. So I just think we either have to be consistent and say everybody gets 50 pounds, or we have to be inconsistent like we are now and take it on a case-by-case basis. But I don't see, given the action we just took, that it would be logical to start saying to some people you can keep something that you couldn't keep before when we're trying to discourage them from getting them in the first place. So I guess unless we want to amend this to cover all fisheries, I would recommend that we vote it down.
Another thing that comes to mind is that we had the debate about total allowable catch versus total allowable landings. And with the scallop vessels getting total allowable landings that were not considered before, the limited access, you know, they were discarding. So there was no data for that. Now it'll add to the TAL, and now this will add to the TAL. So the likelihood of going over, you know, with this type of input control system becomes more and more as you allocate fish.
Anyone else on the motion on the board? Phil?
I just wonder if we have, and I don't really see it in the document, but I probably missed it trying to figure this one out, what the repercussions of this is. I mean, it's quite a bit, I think. Maybe it is, maybe it ain't. I'm not sure where I am, but, you know, has there been any analysis of what that catch in the general category fleet is going to represent?
Yeah, this isn't part of Framework 4. That's why you haven't. That's right. Why when you went looking, you didn't see anything.
I realize that, but I mean, the question still remains: is there an analysis of what this is going to do to the TA?
Phil, do we have anything?
No, I don't have anything. I haven't seen anything.
Me neither. Okay. Harriet, did you have your hand up? I'll go to the audience. Go ahead.
Just for clarification, in other words, they could go to 100 pounds or 150 pounds on a trip, right? Just so I understand what's on the monitor. That's my question, just so it's understandable. If you have a two-day trip, say I go out at 11 o'clock on the 1st, and p.m., and I come in on the 2nd at 11 o'clock, I've spanned 2 days, correctly? So I legally have 100 pounds. Is that what I'm to understand by the writing? I'm just asking for a clarification of what's written on the monitor.
We haven't gotten into that level of detail. We didn't discuss that at the committee. So I can't tell you what the committee's intent was on that.
From what I think the words say is I get 400 pounds of scallops, and I could have 100 pounds of monkfish under that example. I don't know if anybody else sees it that way, or am I incorrect? Just with that example,
I believe that the regulations governing the general category scallop vessel in the south, which is what the corollary of this in the southern area, says for any day or part of a day. So she's correct.
I mean, how can you vote on something if you really or discuss it, or how can you really do it if you really don't understand what's on the monitor? That's my broad question, and then my more specific question is just what I asked. I guess it is 100 pounds, according to Chris, in any area, correct?
Chris? No. Phil.
Phil, excuse me. I'm
That's
sorry,
all right.
Phil.
No, it is. In my
That's
mind, there
my
was
questions.
No there was no uncertainty, and I, you know, the council voted on this in Amendment 2 to apply to general category scallop vessels in the southern area. And set it right in there. So maybe they just forgot.
And for any reason, I come in on the 3rd, then I could have the 150 pounds. So I understand. Okay, thank you.
Maggie.
Thank you. Just to that point, general category scallop trips generally are not more than a day, but so I think that concern is a little overblown. And obviously, there's no analysis of this because you didn't make a decision to include it in this framework, so that nobody really knows what the repercussions of this would be. And you wouldn't until you agreed that you wanted to address it, which is what this motion says. You want to figure out a way to address it in the most expedient way. Ask the RA, and apparently she isn't going to tell us today whether or not she thinks she has the authority to do that. And since she hasn't responded to that possibility, ask her if she can do it under her authority under the exemptions. And if she can't, then this would be added to Amendment 16 to the groundfish plan, because that's the next regulatory action for groundfish. Then, whenever that, if the RA can do it, she'll do it. She'll do the analysis. She'll look at the bycatch. They'll make a decision, yes or no. If she says no, then you'll get an analysis in Amendment 16 that on which you can make a decision whether or not you want to allow it. So you can't, I mean, this is just saying you want to address this issue because you have an obligation to address, to mitigate discards. And you'll do it the quickest way you can. That's all this motion says. And I urge you strongly to vote in favor of it. Thank you.
Anyone else? Okay, back to the council. Any further discussion or questions on this motion, which is not part of Framework 4? Paul.
No, I mean, the argument, we have no data to support this one way or the other, so should say recommend for consideration that the general category in whatever appropriate. You know, in other words, are you tying your hands by saying you approve it already? So just say to recommend consideration that the general category vessels. And I don't know how you're going to, what action.
Any further discussion?
Is that part of that for consideration part of the motion now?
Not yet. This is a horse with no name. Rep.
Just so that we can move this along, I will make a motion that we amend the motion to include for consideration.
Is there a second? Seconded by Terry. Any discussion on the motion to amend? All those in favor of the motion to amend, raise your hand. Five. Opposed? Ten. Motion to amend fails. Back on the main motion. Tom Hill.
Just quickly, what vehicle is this policy supposed to be used in? What vehicle? How is this supposed to be implemented if it is agreed to by the council?
And I suggested before that perhaps the best way to deal with this was to recommend that we write a letter to the regional administrator and ask her to do this. If she can do it, she'll have to base it on some information. If she can't do it, she'll tell us why, and we'll get a letter back saying you can't do it for the following reasons, or the only way you can do it is in this amendment, groundfish amendment, or a joint groundfish monkfish amendment, or something along those lines.
Thank you.
Or you can just vote it down. And
you should add that language to the motion.
Somebody on the council wants to amend the motion to recommend we write a letter to the region. Fine. Dave.
I'd move to amend it so.
Seconded by Dave Preble. Any discussion on the motion to amend? All those in favor, raise your hand. Seven opposed. Seven. Motion fails. Back on the main motion to recommend something. Recommend that the council recommend the general category scallop vessels fishing within the exemptions granted under the ground fish plan be allowed the same monkfish incidental catch allowed in small dredge fisheries. All those in favor? Three. All those opposed? Motion fails. Two abstentions. Okay, one last, Phil, unless you have anything, I have one last motion. Okay. To recommend that we approve and forward Framework 4 to the regional office for implementation. Seconded by John Nelson. As amended, correct. Okay, all those in favor, raise your hand. Fifteen opposed, abstentions, one abstention. Motion passes. Okay. Okay, it's okay. We're in recess until 1:30, when we'll have the open period for public comments.